So if you ever want to speak in front of a group of people and share your message and grow your business by doing that, this is an episode you want to listen to. Or even if you want to give back to the community and encourage them with the learnings you have and your journey so far, you will find this episode super, super helpful. My guest today is an ex-president of Toastmasters and a member of the Professional Speaking Association. He absolutely loves to see people develop and spend time with anyone who wants to improve their speaking skills. And so we delve into a lot of different tactics. And so we had a really great conversation. We delve into different tactics and strategies and ideas that you can use. We talk about how you can find a message even when you feel you do not have something interesting to say. And he also talks about how you can find unique speaking opportunities from scratch if you're just starting out. He also touches on three different ways that you can make your presentation super impactful. So without any further ado, let's get started.
Welcome to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast, where we ask today's most successful experts and entrepreneurs to share the most powerful lead generation and appointment setting tactics they use to build their business and grow their revenue. Now your host from the city that never sleeps, New York, is Kwesi Sachijinai.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for joining the conversation. This is Kwesi Sachijinai, and my guest today is Graham Dobbin. Graham built a training and consulting business in the UK. Initially, when he started, he struggled, and then he realized that a lot of people needed to experience who he was as a person and what he could do. And one of the best ways that he found was to speak in front of groups. So he became super passionate about building teams and relationships and speaking. And in fact, it was relationships that brought him very quickly to New York once he decided to come over. He arrived in New York last year from Manchester. And since then, he's been training and speaking and encouraging people to get in front of people as a way of building their businesses. Graham has spoken and trained in the UK, in South Africa, in Sweden, in Texas, California, Virginia, New York, a lot more places. And he currently is a co-owner of Ascentive New York, which he co-founded with the original founder of BNI. So I'm super, super excited to have him, and we're going to have a lot of fun. All right. So Graham, thanks so much for joining the conversation today.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah. So I'm super excited about this because you and I first connected at BNI here in New York. And one of the things that, you know, stood out to me was your sort of the passion you have for connecting with people. And later, I know we had a great conversation about public speaking, networking, sales, and a lot more different topics. And I want us to delve into that a little bit in this conversation. But before we do that, you know, we have a lot of business owners, sales leaders, entrepreneurs who are listening, and they already have a lot of things to do, on a lot of things on their plates, right? They're swamped with taking care of a business on a day-to-day basis, and public speaking is the last thing they think about. So I want us to lay a foundation for this chat and tell me, how important is public speaking for growing businesses, your experience with your own business, and also what you've seen with, you know, the training that you've been doing?
It's really interesting that people still buy from people. So we've got to allow them to access us. So I get that public speaking might not be high on someone's agenda. But say, for example, you're a CPA or an attorney and you've got a good message. Being able to get that message over and allow people to have access to you, see what you're like, makes it so much easier for people to one, engage with you, but secondly, to decide, would you be somebody that they'd like to work with? So for my own business, it was something I discovered really early that I needed to get out and get in front of people. You know, I was selling it at one point coaching services and training services, and everything was hypothetical until they actually saw you in action. And when people see you in action, they can then decide whether they can connect with you or not. And you know what? Either way is really good. It doesn't matter. It cuts down a sales process quite quickly. Mm-hmm. If people like you, they'll come up and talk to you. If they don't, they won't. So you're not prospecting them. But also, you know what? There are lots and lots of experts out there. People love to take on knowledge. Why not give them it? Why not give them a chance to access them?
I know a lot of people, I want to play the devil's advocate for a second, because people would say, you know, it takes a lot of work to, you know, prepare a speech or a conversation, you know, talking points, and then go to the event and, you know, talk to people. It takes a whole lot of time. And, you know, also these days, a lot of businesses and deals are being done, you know, virtually. So do you feel that compared to, say, 10 years ago, do you feel that speaking is still, you know, relevant? And if you want to scale your speaking, like get a lot more speaking gigs, is it even possible?
That it's a really good question. One of the things that the speaking's become with the advent of things like TEDx, etc. Speaking, people speaking and getting information from that and from YouTube, it just become an acceptable way. So when I get that it takes time to prepare, I would also question how long does it take us to get a new client? If we had the opportunity to get in front of 10, even just 10 people, we're not talking hundreds, even just 10 people to get our message over, is that not a really good use of time rather than to prospect, maybe even go networking, random networking? Because you and I both know what New York's like. Mm-hmm. We could network morning, noon, and night. That's why people don't have time. But having a strategy behind it makes such a difference. And if you can get 10, 15, 20 people into a room or be a speaker at an event, it might only be 10, 15, 20 minutes, but be able to get your message over, not in a salesy way, in an informative way. People want information. The sales almost just comes. You don't need to talk about it. People will make up their own minds whether they want to deal with you.
Right. I want us to delve into some of the tactics in a minute, but so someone might be listening and they'll go like, hey, listen, Graham, I hear you. I need to get in front of more people. I need to do a lot more public speaking, but I do not have anything interesting to say. So I want you to speak to such a person for a second. How can anyone find a unique message or voice or interesting story that they can tell?
You know what? It's when people are experts about their business, they forget what they know. Our message doesn't always have to be unique. It maybe is just a different approach in it. Why do people buy from you? Why do people deal with you? Why are you in business anyway? What makes you different? And don't, you know, don't tell me. We'd say this in sales as well, Quasi. Don't tell me this because we're on time or we're great quality or we're the cheapest. There's always something else behind it. So once we find out why we're in business, why we've got customers already, that's the start of our message, without a doubt. Because what happens even in the most mature markets is people have some really unique viewpoints of the market. So it doesn't need to be a unique message, but certainly an opinion piece that gets people thinking, that maybe gets people seeing things in a slightly different way.
It reminds me of one of, I heard a saying on one podcast that there are no unique messages, but unique messengers.
Really well put. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Completely agree with that. That's a really nice way of saying it.
Right. So you're saying that regardless of, you know, the market or industry that you're in, you just got to look at, you know, your journey, your story, your perspective that you've built over time for that category and try to, you know, craft something informative about that.
Yeah. Look, a really good place to start is why do you do what you do? What's your driver? Why do you do it? What do you serve? And, you know, generally, if I ever ask anyone that, they turn and say, because I like to help people or you know, something really, really high level like that. But when you dig into it, there tends to be a unique story of why we do what we do or how we got into it. And that's what people are really interested in.
A good part of what our team does is, you know, getting people conversations with the dream clients and dream partners that they want to work with. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the challenges that you probably know this is finding an audience, getting that speaking opportunity. So on top of the challenge that, hey, I have nothing interesting to say, which I feel you've totally addressed that, how do you then move on to the next step of actually finding, you know, real target audiences that you can talk to?
You know, when we start out, If the truth be told, let's not be selective. sometimes you turn up at the opening of a door. When I was thinking about doing this, I was thinking, where have I spoken? What have been my audiences? What have I done? And the natural thing would always be to say, turn up at a networking event, add some value, get some business people in front of you. In the last year, I've spoken in front of a group of physics professors, senior managers in large companies, 16 to 20-year-olds who were actually deciding whether they were going to go to prison or take on a job. You know, they were a real crossroads.
What's the process you use for that? Like, do people reach out to you? I guess you're not an expert, so people reach out to you. But when you're starting, did you have a process or a platform that you went to connect with people?
You know, I would always ask, especially when people were dealing with groups, I would always ask them what they were doing. What was the message that they were trying to get across? How were they engaging with their groups? Could I help in any way? And I spoke about things that I wasn't necessarily an expert on, but maybe had a passion about. And was quite happy to turn up. And, you know, that's when one of the biggest things and one of the biggest things that stops people from going public speaking is sometimes you've got to learn on your feet. Sometimes, you know, you don't know the audience fully and you're trying things out. So it is sometimes a bit hit and miss, but what I would definitely say is turn up at every single opportunity. We talk about New York again. Networking is a great, and I know it's a very big wide word, but the amount of non-structured networking that's out there that's just looking for something to be a little bit new, a little bit different to it would be a good start. But there's Rotary clubs. Any type of professional association tends to have speakers at the meetings. Looking at youths as well, schools, colleges. Where could you add value to people that you've maybe been in the same position, and you're not necessarily talking about your profession, but you may be talking about something like how you got into your profession. You may be able to add some value there. And these places are crying out for good people just to come and tell their story. And that's a great way to start, because do you know what? It's your story. That's what makes it unique. It's nobody else's story. It's yours. And that's where people want to hear it.
Mm. And so when you say not being selective, do you then, you know, after speaking at different places, maybe you get two or three speaking opportunities, you probably need to record that and use that to build your portfolio. And then you can actually reach out to the target audience that you're looking for.
It is, but you never know where places are going to take you. I say that. So to give you an idea, in the UK, I was asked to help with some 16, 17-year-old kids who were really at a crossroads in their life. They hadn't done well academically. And they were being put onto a government scheme to become some kind of coach, and it was through a professional football club. And they said, can you just come and give an hour on mindset to these guys? Let them see things from a different angle. So we did a number of them. I ended up working with the youth team in the professional football club, and then the first team. And then I was the first presenter ever at St. George's Park, which is the Football Association's brand new headquarters, where I spoke in front of all 72 league clubs. That came from me just turning around and saying, I'd love to help these kids, see if there's anything I can do to influence them to take the right path. And it was as simple as that. So sometimes we don't know where things will take us. And would that be my target audience, 16, 17-year-olds? Absolutely not. But it gave me a phenomenal opportunity to turn up a world-renowned headquarters, a football association's headquarters that had just been opened. I was the first speaker. They weren't too sure when they realised I was Scottish and I was turning up at the English football headquarters. So,
right.
I think they were quite disappointed. But you know, really, I'm not saying take every opportunity, but really, really consider every opportunity. And if you can give something back, or if it's an opportunity to just even craft a speech together, a talk, or try things out, I would suggest do it.
Mm. got to start from somewhere. Talking about associations, I remember we did one, you know, we were helping one attorney. She had just started, you know, her business, and she wanted to connect with groups in New York to get speaking opportunities. So what we did was we found all the meetup groups that were targeting female entrepreneurs, and we reached out to them and said, hey, here's what she's done. And she was curious if she could add value, and suggested a very specific topic that she could speak on. Are there any sort of tactics that you have used in the past when you're reaching out to associations?
Something like that is you're right, being very specific. So I've just said, be general and grab anything. When you're going to something like that, being specific and saying, I'm an expert here in this narrow market that people are really interested in. So attorneys, we all know attorneys, we all know CPAs. Mm-hmm. But when an attorney turned around and said, you know, I'm an absolute expert in trademarks, nothing else. That's we've all got stories from that industry of when things have gone well and things have gone badly. I know electricians who've done public speaking who just talk about what happens if you don't wire a house correctly. You know, it's not cabled up. So being able to target, come down and say, this is what I'm an expert in, and this is information that other people don't know. I mean, a really good part to start off on how to come up with a subject to speak on is, did you know? And just write out facts that people probably don't know about your industry. And I say probably, but they probably don't know about your industry. That's a really good place to start.
This is so good. I love it. Ask yourself, did you know? And then come up with topics or ideas that people might find shocking or interesting. This is really good. I want us to take it to the next level. So let's say you already, you know, you got the speaking opportunity. Now, you have spent decades speaking and training speakers around the world. And in minutes or even seconds, you can tell if, you know, people are actually telling the stories really well or not. So what are some of the common mistakes that you found people make when, you know, they're speaking in public?
Oh, wow. You know, it's a large time, it's the attitude. It's the attitude of, I always tell people, go out there and be the expert. But there's a limit to that. Be aware that other people have a contribution to make. And sometimes they go out and say they're the expert and they don't want to hear anybody else. When we're speaking in public, allow interaction. Encourage it. Get people involved. But what happens then is by people trying to show that they're expert, I have heard so many speakers ask the audience a question and then turn around and tell them they're wrong. Or tell them no. Mm-hmm. Or when they want them to do something, when they want the audience to take an action, they say, what you will do is this. And it becomes very much a lecture rather than a talk. Mm. Remember, when we're speaking, we should be speaking as if we're speaking to one or two people in the room and that's it. It's a chat. And we would never turn around to a mate in a bar and turn around and with their opinion and just turn around and say, no, you're wrong, it's this. We would probably talk it through. But one of the other things that tends to happen is people don't practice enough. And you know what? If you've got time, one of the criminal mistakes when you're up there, if you've got 10 minutes, be ready to get off there after 9 and a half. Mm-hmm. Do not take 11 minutes. There will be people looking in the audience that are sitting waiting and it's this... has breached into so many different parts of my life. that if somebody is 1 or 2 minutes late, it begins to really, I begin to get anxious about it. So as a speaker, always, always, always keep to time. Always. There's just absolutely no excuse for going over. If people are asking and you've got a really interactive audience, the only time I've gone over is when I've said, guys, you're asking lots of questions. Do you mind if I have an extra 10 minutes at the end? If I've got agreement, let's keep going. I'm good with that. In preparation for this, I was thinking, what are the mistakes I've made? Let me tell you, one of the big ones I remember.
Sure.
This was huge. I was about 2 years ago, and I was speaking at a conference to a multi-level marketing company in the UK. And there were almost 300 people in the room. And I'd been asked to come in and talk about sales. And I was kind of talking a little bit about sales, and just it was more about relationship building. And it seemed to go against almost everything that they were being told. They were being told to leave their business cards everywhere, talk to anybody, knock on any door, pick up any phone. And I'm saying, oh, this is, let's play the longer game. But as I'm looking into the group, there were a group of about five people just to my left, seven or eight rows in, with their arms folded. They were not engaged. Absolutely not engaged. They did not like what I was saying, and it was really obvious. And I must have spent, out of my hour, I must have spent 10 minutes almost trying to convince these guys to like me. And I realized what I was doing. I was actually ignoring 98% of the audience. Now, I wasn't quite ignoring them, but I was playing to these guys and trying to turn them around, rather than just keeping going with a message where I was hitting the majority. And speakers try to do that. We see people that aren't engaged, and we try to engage them, rather than just focusing on the majority of the group that are with us. Give them value. It doesn't matter. You know, if you think that one person doesn't like you, you're wrong. There are much more than one in any audience.
Right.
that's just how it is. But go with the people that are coming with you. That's it. I do remember coming out with saying to somebody once, there were two or three people that really didn't get it. And they said there was more than that. So it doesn't matter. If people don't want to engage, allow them not to engage. And so some of the mistakes, and I was a really big learning for me, that work with the people that want to work with you, and keep going with that message. And it's amazing. Some of the smaller groups, the most vocal, the most resistant, have actually turned out to be the biggest fans. And that was particularly true of the younger guys, the 16, 17-year-olds. Really, really resistant to begin with. And some of them were absolutely amazing at the end. Absolutely amazing. So just keep going.
Gotcha. So the three things I'm getting out of this is you got to be engaging by, you know, interacting with the audience if you can. You also need to practice before you get on stage. Yep. And just like your story said, you have to focus on the majority of the people that are engaged. And, you know, you have to ignore a certain portion if they're not really connecting with the message. Now, I want to wrap up with, you know, I heard one speaker say that when you start your message, you should have something really shocking. And he gave an example, which I feel was super, super interesting. And I just want your take on that. I don't really recall exactly what he said, but it goes something like someone walks up onto the stage, he was introduced, and the first few words that came out of his mouth was, I think it was around like, when I was seven years old, my dad broke my arms for the seventh time. So like it was really shocking, and everyone was engaged at that point. Now I bring this up, I'm just curious to know, what are some of these specific like introductory tactics that you use to really grab the attention really early on in the conversation?
It's really interesting hearing that story, because I use one or two things quite similar about talking when I was younger. What you hear a lot of people coming on, hello, my name is Graham and I'm going to talk about this. Nobody really cares. Just get into
right.
Grab them. Grab people's attention. What do you want to see if you switch on a TV program? Do you want to see all the titles? They just want to get into the story. So get into the story. And I do that. I normally come out with a story on why I do what I do. And I've got, you know, there's four or five different ways that I can do that, and four or five different bits of evidence that kind of connect me to why I do what I do. So I normally start with a story about when I was younger. And I mean, one of them, probably the most engaging, and I know we don't have time to go into the whole story, but one of the most engaging is when I stand up and say, you know what, I was this high, which is quite small. I was about 3 years old, and in front of me was a big red button. I've got everyone in the room. They want to know what's happening with that big red button. That's, you want to know now, don't you?
Yeah, let's just give the suspense. This has been really great. This has been awesome. So, Graham, where can people learn about your work, connect with you, invite you to speak to the groups they have?
Well, we've got a website, newyork.ascentive. That's A-S-E. entiv.com, New York .incentive. And, you know, I've got quite an unusual name. So Graham Dobbin, link in with me. You know, is one of those. I love when people link in and tell me why they're doing it. Connect. You know, I'm not one of those that likes when somebody just sends me a random connection. But connect, ask questions. That's what we're all here for. And if anybody wants to do that and they've got specific questions, I'm more than happy to try to help answer them. And if I don't have the answer, I normally know someone else who does.
Right. Yeah, we'll put everything in the show notes as well so people can easily find that. Awesome. Graham, thanks so much. Really appreciate this.
Good to speak to you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast with Kwesi Sachijinai. Find out more about how to get high-value appointments at catalyze.io. And while you're there, check out the free resources for appointment setting. And be listening for the next episode of the Art of Appointment Setting podcast.